Welcome to Men Are Nuts, a podcast about mental health, emotional health, physical health, awareness in men, women and society. First, it started with MAN, the acronym for Men Are Nuts. And we have a very special guest on the show for you today. He's been on before. Guys, apologies if I'm speaking out of breath. I'm sure he'll understand. He seems like a forgiving person and a very kind person. So let's introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm David Baker, and I'm a life coach, and I'm from Bury St Edmunds in Suffolk, and I'm out of breath too, because we're always rushing around to get things done.
Yeah, you know, if you're talking about rushing, I normally finish at 1, well, because it's Ramadan here, the days are shortened, so we finish at 1, and there's an accident, and I only live, 4 or 5 minutes away. And there's an accident in one of the, basically as you have the main road and then kind of like the slip part where you have to turn round. You know, like a slip lane where you can turn round, but there's accidents happening there. And it's like it looks like a 3-car pile up. But I think, when I say pile up, I mean, backed into each other. And when you see the last car, it's like, wow. Do you know what I mean? You know, the front car probably doesn't have as much damage. The second car, the back's gone in. Because they're all Land Cruisers as well.
They're all big cars out there.
And quite often, I don't see how you can have an accident in that, going in that lane. Because if it's going to turn to red or if it's going to turn to green, it's a slow thing where you turn, like you're doing a U-turn. So why would you be going that fast down that end? It just didn't make sense to me. So, you expect an accident on a dual carriageway or a motorway, but not something like that where it's a turning. So, and they do drive crazy here. So, yeah.
That's why people are amazing, Andy, because they'll find a way to do something, no matter how difficult it is to do that thing. having an accident where they shouldn't have an accident. They've gone out of their way to be that special, right?
It's funny enough because somebody, it was my someone I knew, they said that they always said that if the young people here could get into motor racing, they'd be good at it. Do you know what I mean? The locals here, because of the lack of fear, because they always leave things you say inshallah and that's God willing, they leave it in the hands and leave everything in the hands of God. So, and the way they drive, I mean, they do drive really some of the things I've seen here, I've seen guys where they've got the left foot on the dashboard, they've got a baby on the lap, and they're driving these Land Cruisers. It's just defined. And obviously here they do the things where the kids play in the back of the cars and jumping up and down and all that sort of stuff. There's no real safety element. I'm not saying that they're all like that, but I'm saying for when you do see it, you think, gosh, it's almost like that thing, like inshallah, God willing, or whatever, whatever's going to happen will happen. They leave it in God's hands. So if they do drive like that, they're leaving it in God's hands, what might happen? Which is, I don't know. We might find it strange because it's a new human life, but for them, that's the way they live. So it's crazy.
There's always things in life that that come along to amaze us and make us think, and things like that, that you see them all the time. It doesn't matter whether you're in Qatar or Bury St Edmunds, there's always things that make you think. It's just like, how did that thing get there, or how did that thing happen, or and again, sometimes you just got to look back and go, you know, hey, that's God has something to do with that, you know.
Yeah, and we all have stories to tell, don't we? We have all, you know, when we like I'm telling you that story, yeah. And there's more, and then like you say, when you go to somewhere else, you find nuances in those and things that you're not expecting, or a bit quirky, or just things that amaze you. You know, I remember when we was, you know, here at the roundabouts, some of the roundabouts, they used to put a lot of the streets used to be controlled by roundabouts. They put loads of roundabouts in, and, you know, now they're changing that, they're taking them all out, so it's all gone backwards, I'd say, or gone forwards, if you want to put it that way. And there was, and because it hardly gets any rain, the place hardly gets maybe 2 days or 3 days of rain a year. And then what happens, because there's no drainage, they have these big machines come out and suck up the water, massive machines, and suck up the water where it's been flooded and all that. And I remember pulling up to this roundabout, this massive roundabout, and in the rain, and there was a police officer. And because they're not used to rain here, they love it. So there's a police officer with his trousers rolled up, no shoes on, no socks on, directing traffic in the rain. You see what I mean? So you see the beauty of it.
It's, yeah, there's something magical about things like that, you know, finding joy in something that somebody else could find miserable. You know, you got to love the rain. The rain is, you know, like a reset switch for you sometimes. You know, I kind of wrote about something like that the other day. Do you remember the nursery rhyme, Itsy Bitsy Spider?
Yeah.
You know, the rain is, you know, never ever stopped him. Never ever stopped the spider, because he would just go back up and start again. That's like perseverance and keeping going on and on and on, you know. And for that police officer to be there, he's doing his job and he's loving it. You know, you got to find the joy in the little moments, the little things. And hat off to that guy, you know.
It's just, I mean, like I said, I've never, you know, it's something obviously you don't see every day. And coming from the UK where it rains all the time, you know, you wouldn't find a police officer doing that. Whereas here, because it's such a warm country, it's just amazing to see. And like I say, even since then, I found out, like, here, that the children celebrate the rain because it's so hot. And like I say, you don't get rain, maybe, like I say, two, and when I say 2 days, that's not, sometimes it's not even full day. When I say 2 days, it could be, it rains for a few hours, and then it'll stop. And then it'll rain the next day after a couple of hours, and then that's it for the rest of the year. So, you know, even then, I've been shocked when I've lasted a couple of years ago where they had lightning here. I've never seen, I've been here how many years, I've never seen, you know, there was a thunderstorm once. Obviously, that's maybe due to climate change or whatever, but yeah, there's, like you say, you've got to find the beauty in things, and then you've got so many stories to tell in your life.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's, you know, our lives are all made up of little stories that we can tell, you know, good ones, bad ones, and, you know, as long as you can look back on your stories and take what lessons out of them, you know, you're always going to grow bigger and stronger. I know when we talked last time, we talked about my past life before I got to where I was. You know, my problems with depression and alcoholism, and you know, my suicide attempt. And you know, looking back from there to where I am now, the comparison is, you know, amazing. You know, and every day, I'm learning new things myself, and you know, passing them on to other people. But I'm growing every day. You know, it's like Jim Rohn says, you can't just be a good teacher, you've got to be a good student as well. And you know, I've studied my life and you know, the lessons that it taught me, and you know, I can push forward now and achieve my dreams and achieve my goals because I'm not weighed down by my past anymore. you know, the only time I look back is to see how far I've come. And, you know, every day is an amazing day, because I can find something new in every day. And that's what we all should be striving to do, is to, you know, take that moment, because each day we only get one shot at this. You know, we've got to find that, you know, that oomph to get going for that day, you know, and then what gives us that magic, that goal, that, you know, what is our why? Why are we getting towards where we are? You know, you're doing the podcast here, which is absolutely amazing, and you've talked to so many amazing people. And, you know, you were telling me the other day that, you know, you can see it growing further and further and further. You know, that's your goal. You know, we've all got our goals, and, you know, that's what we need. We need that drive. And if we don't have goals, you know, you just end up staying where you are.
I mentioned it in the podcast before, and I think I mentioned it on maybe one or two podcasts, is that the first thing you mentioned about story, I've always said this, I use these references, and I always see, like, I tell people that our life is like a book, and we're this book. And it doesn't matter, and it could be small, it could be big, how many pages, it's up to not just left in your hands, but obviously there's people around that can, you know, that can shorten that book or whatever, illness and all these things. But your book, you're a book, and each chapter, there's a chapter, because we always talk about life as being a chapter, different chapters in our life. And I was like, our life as a book, and we go through different chapters. So, you know, my old reference points for that was to do with school. So, for instance, people used to question why we don't have as many friends when we're older in comparison to when we're starting school. And that's a chapter there, isn't it? That part of our life, whatever age group is up to, that's a chapter of the school. Then it's the next chapter, and you gain people and lose people along the way. And for a lot of people, obviously, there's a lot of people out there that will... It's funny, isn't it, how we're all intermingle, and we all go to these schools, but yet, let's just say if I went to your school and there was 30 of us in the school, quite often people leave the school and go, oh, well, I didn't keep in touch with those people. I didn't, you know, the other 28. So you won't know anybody in your next part of your life from the 28, and I won't. And I find that strange. Now I'm talking about it, I find that strange that we don't. Because what happens is we grow, don't we? We move on to, you know, someone else comes into our lives. Someone comes into their lives, and it's not until you bring up things like, I don't know, Facebook, or if you bang into them you walk into them in the street, and say, oh, hi, how are you? I remember you from blah blah blah. And quite often, like I say, we have different chapters, and our chapters take on different stories and different elements to it, different paragraphs. And that's how I liken ourselves to a book, and that's what we are, you know. And we, when it comes to the end, that book closes, and that's our story to be told. And quite so often during that story, we even write our own story. So we write things like journals to kind of help us cope with things. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Or we do art, or we do music, or something to journal, you know. You know, you say to a musician, they actually journal through the music. You know what I mean? Let's give someone an example, like rap music. They actually journaling. Funny enough, the things that they've done or would have done, or their life at that moment in time, or even 5 years ago, and to the point. So now, what you're saying is here for you is you only looking back to see how far you've come, and also as well, there's another part of it there where you said now you're starting to see new things every day. But isn't it funny how when we go through things, we don't see those new things every day? They are happening, but because we don't see it, because we're struggling with mental health and struggling with depression or whatever it is, we don't see that new thing happening.
Yeah, I know. You know, in the past, for myself, life was very blinkered. You know, when you're going through depression, it, you know, you are just focused on going through the motions each day, trying to keep yourself going. You know, you put on a mask, you know, you're smiling for everybody, but you're not feeling it. But your eyes are blinkered, you know, like the horses. You know, you're not looking left or right, you know, you're not taking the time to see the beauty in everyday life. When I was in America, I always used to tell people about England and how it felt to me, that it was always grey. It was, every day was grey. There was no, the sun never shone in England. And since I've been on back in England and changing my life, every day is a blue day, and the sky is, you know, the sun always comes out. You know, it's your perspective, it's the way you look at things. Wayne Dyer said, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And that, you know, that is so powerful, because, you know, all you have to do is actually, instead of focusing on the negative, just step back and see about all the good things you actually really do have in your life already. You know, there's so many things that you can be grateful for, and thankful for, and happy for. And when you realize that your entire life is just about simplicity, the more simple you can make it, the happier you will be. Everybody seems to be in this rat race to get ahead, and they're really just on a treadmill going round and round and round. You know, oh, when I get the supercar, then I'll be happy. You know, you get the supercar and you're not happy. You know, why are you not happy? Well, it's probably not what you wanted in the first place. You know, when I get this, when I get the house, when I get a girlfriend, when I get a wife, when I get whatever it is, and you worry, you know, you're looking to something for your happiness outside, and that's not where your happiness comes from. It comes from inside. And, you know, once we stop looking at life with those blinkers on and step back and really look at what makes us tick, everything just opens up. You know, you see the good in everything, and when you start seeing it, it becomes kind of intoxicating. It's like, wow, I can see the good in that, I can see the good in that, and your personality starts to change to this positive creature. And you know, that's one of the things that's, you know, happened for me in my life, that I see the good in everything now. And, you know, whereas I was extremely judgmental in the past, I've cut that out of my life. You know, I don't make snap judgments anymore. I take the time to sit there and observe and learn. And it makes all the difference.
I was listening to you there, and I was thinking, when you said, I was smiling, I was saying, because I often associate, because I'm here, and it's always sunny, when someone describes to me, says to me about England, it's always grey. But I know that when I was working, I didn't even call it work. I was doing stuff for myself, which was going around schools and coaching kids and young people and adults, and just being involved in the community and getting, you know, working in Leicester, Derby, you know, running around all over the place. And it's funny, because when I think of that period in my life, I can't remember a grey day. It's funny that I never can't remember a grey day. Every day, if someone said to me, what did you do? You know, I was saying, oh, I was just coaching and blah, blah. But every time I remember when I was coaching, I don't remember a day when it rained. I'd have to dig deep. Even though it might have rained, because it's England, even though it might have been grey, I never saw that, if you see what I mean. I don't...
Yep.
If someone said to me, paint a picture now of you coaching back in England, I always... And even when you were speaking then, I was thinking, oh, I remember when I was coaching. Oh, it was always the days when it was sunny. So that means, like you said, when you're in a certain frame of mind, and when you come out of all the downtime and the down periods in your life, you see, it goes back to that thing, doesn't it? You see the light, there's a light there at the end of the tunnel, and that new tunnel becomes all light. That's an interesting thought process, because I never analysed it to the point until just now, where I just thought, you know what? It's not. Yes, it's grey. I described it as grey because I'm living here and I wanted to get out of the cold. But I know that when I was doing stuff for myself, and going around schools, and you know the kids are smiling, and that was for me like a purpose. My purpose was to help people, help the children, help young people, help adults. I never saw a grey day.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you're talking about your memories of coaching, and I just went back to some of my memories of coaching, coaching football as well, and the smell of fresh cut grass came to mind. You know, you're out on the field, and, you know, somebody's just, you know, before you get out there, somebody's cut the grass, and that smell, you know, and the smile on the kids' faces as they're turning up to the lesson, you know, and as a coach, you're always thinking about, okay, how many kids have I got here? My lesson plan's gone out the window. Because only a certain amount showed up. It's, you know, and you're always thinking on your feet, but you always leave the session with a smile because the kids have done something to make you laugh or whatever. And it's always, like you say, it's never raining when you're coaching.
I think that a lot of that is lends itself to the thing that you enjoy. The kids, no matter how you know their little quirks and stuff like that, you know, whether it's something kicks off or whatever it happens, you still enjoy that. It's what you isn't. It's whatever you're doing. If you were doing that a job and it meant watching the clock, then the day's grey. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you do something like that, which is the reason why I said not work, because I didn't see that as work. You see what I mean?
It's what Alan Watts, the philosopher, he says, don't think of work as work ever. Call it play. You know, well, if you change its meaning, it becomes something so much bigger than, you know, just what you want to get a paycheck. If you play your job, you know, you start to have fun with it, and then, you know, that makes the difference. It doesn't matter if you're an engineer or a football coach, you know, if what you're doing, you're playing at it, you can take enjoyment out of it. You know, and I love that philosophy. You know, when I'm, you know, doing my work, I'm playing, I'm having fun doing what I'm doing. You know, I hear so many different stories from so many different people that have gone through similar things to what I've gone through. But, you know, I also have people who just want to come to me for motivation. You know, I enjoy helping. I enjoy that feeling. So, you know, I don't have that grayness that we were talking about. It just isn't there anymore. And I normally find if I'm not doing what I like to be doing, that's when I can feel my levels go down. So, you know, that's when I know I have to switch my mind to something more positive and that I enjoy.
And also as well, as I say to you as well, Even if we're not doing that thing that we enjoy, even if we're doing that thing that we don't enjoy, we always know that there's something. Like you said, it's about switching your mind, but also switching your mind to the fact that this thing of joy is, you either find joy in that thing somewhere, or you kind of switch off and you find joy in the fact that this isn't going to last for this next minute or next hour. You know, it's not going to last all day. I'm going to be doing something that I enjoy in the next hour. Do you know what I mean? It might be. I don't enjoy ironing. Yeah, I do enjoy ironing, but myself personally, but I'm saying it might be that. That sounds a strange thing, but I mean, it might be that I don't enjoy ironing, but I'll enjoy cooking. So I know that I've got to iron for this period in time, knowing for a full fact that I've got to get it done, find some enjoyment in it. But I know that after this, oh yes, I can go and cook then. Yeah. And you start to think, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's all about finding the goal in what you're doing. You know, if something is an unpleasant task, what's the goal? You know, okay, I mean, you might love ironing. I'm not a fan of ironing. but what is the goal of ironing? Is the iron is so you can your shirts are nice. So when you go out, when you meet people and speak to people, that you look your best. That's the goal. So, you know, you're doing it for a reason. You're doing it for later, for that appearance later on. It's finding the goal. It's like finding the goal, like doing the dishes. That's another task I'm not fond of. But why do you do the dishes? It's so that you can eat later on, you know. There's goals in everything. Some are a lot bigger than others. But it's that little win. That's what we're after, you know. And I said something the other day to somebody else about motivation. You know, it's not motivation that we're lacking. What we've got abundance of is procrastination. And when we've got procrastination, we don't get the motivation. So what is it you're procrastinating at? What is it you don't want to do? You know, for me, it would be the dishes or the ironing, you know. But if I get it done, then I will find my motivation. You know, it's, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, when I was mentioned that thing, when I always mention that I like ironing, it always creases people up.
Oh, pun intended, right?
Oh, no, I've got to do some ironing. A pressing engagement.
That's the way you use the iron.
A pressing engagement.
I like that. I'm going to have to use that one.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's good that we can, do you know what I mean? You know, like I say, after everything we go through, we can sit here and laugh about things that, you know, that, like you said, you don't find. Not so much joy in it, but you know, something that you don't enjoy or whatever. You can, and that's the thing of the beauty of life is finding the laughter out of something and the joy out of things that we might not seem comfortable with or we don't like. Like you say, even that. I literally, I just come up with that out of the blue. From what you're saying is that you know, we spoke about the depression and stuff like that, and you basically, in a sense, you've come full circle, because life is about cycles, isn't it, and circles. We're surrounded by them all the time. You've kind of come out of that, and now you see, and now you're recognizing if something you don't like or something that may be upsetting you or whatever, you kind of recognize the signs that, oh, not to go there.
Sometimes it's not about not going there. Sometimes it's about tackling it and going there and getting it out of the way. You know,
going there in ways and sense that could take you down towards back to depression.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, one of the key things to having, if you have depression, is knowing your triggers. What is going to set you off? What is going to drag you down? And you know, I spent a lot of time studying my depression and working out what it was that would take me down, you know. And it could be something as simple as listening to a sad song, you know. That would then click in my mind, oh boom, you know, oh yeah, you're feeling sad, you don't have this in your life. And it would take me down, and it could take me down for a couple of days before I would bounce back up again. I've worked out when these things are coming along. I see it and I stop it. I get control of my mind. I tell it, you know, hey, we've had this conversation before. I don't want to go this way again. We're not going to do this. And I'm normally, it's if I don't want to do something, I force myself to do it. It's getting out of that, the prison of your comfort zone where you feel safe. And that's where I think my depression was at its ripe. Because I was comfortable, I wasn't going anywhere, so I was miserable. So pushing myself out of my comfort zone, doing things that I didn't necessarily want to do, or doing things that scared me, really made me focus on the positive things in life. And things like, even like this interview with you, Andy, perhaps if you want to say like a year ago, I wouldn't have dreamed of being able to talk like this, yeah, as confident as I am. I would have been, oh no, what have I got to say? God, give me the questions in advance so I can think about it. It's, the answers are always there with me because it's my life. I know me, so the answers are always there. Whether I like the answer or not is neither here nor there. It's still my story. It's still my life. It's still how I get going, get dressed in the morning. You've always got to dig deep, find out what your problems are, and then work on knocking them down. And I think a lot of people, when they've got depression and anxiety, they rush to get it all knocked out of the way at once, and that is asking for like a big setback. You've got to do it one bit at a time. One of my, I've been depression free for, a good 3 years now, I guess. I still have little issues that I want to sort out. Procrastination is one of my biggest nemesis, and I force myself when I spot myself procrastinating to get on and do it. Do the thing, get it done. And it's amazing how better you feel for it, just getting things done. I would put things off, and then that thing would turn into a problem, and then it would turn into a bigger problem. Then I would have worried about that problem, then I would have got anxiety, then that would have gone into my depression, and then you're in a big hole. And I don't let that happen anymore. I cut it off at the pass. I cut it off there and then, and it makes all the difference.
So when you say procrastinate, because people have different words, the word is what it is, but people have, it's like having a cold. People say, oh, you've got a cold, but there's different variances. What's your level of procrastination? Is it like, because some people's level is like, they don't do anything.
Yeah, it's, you see, for me, my procrastination is changing. It used to be literally, I would procrastinate against everything. It didn't matter what it was. I wouldn't pay the bills. I wouldn't do, what I was supposed to do. I wouldn't be where I was supposed to be on time. I wouldn't, no matter what it was, I was just not. I didn't feel I had the energy to cope with day-to-day life. And, the times I would not want to get out of bed, I would pull the blankets over my head, just didn't want to participate in what we call life. Now, my procrastination is something totally different. It's like when I'm trying to write my next piece or, that sort of thing. If I think I don't have an idea, I will put off writing. Well, no, the secret for me really is to just get down and start typing, and then that piece will come. So I have to sometimes force myself to sit down at the keyboard and write. other things like procrastination is I've been procrastinating talking to my mentors. I always felt like, these people who are fairly big names, you know, why would they want to speak to me? You know, I always put off approaching them and talking to them because I was always telling myself, you know, oh, why would they want to speak to you? So I would put it off. I would procrastinate. And that's what my level of procrastination is now. But again, I'm taking that and I've turned it around. And even in this past weekend, I've made more contacts this weekend just because I made a decision not to procrastinate. Like Saturday morning, I wasn't wanting to get up and do my, because I get up at 5 o'clock every morning, and I thought to myself, it's Saturday. Let me have a day off. Let me chill out.
Yeah, chill out.
And I'm. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I never set my alarm, but I woke up at five. And my brain was yelling at me. Have you heard that song by Rag and Bone Man, "All You've Ever Wanted"?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know that one.
Yeah.
That was in my head at 5 o'clock in the morning and would not go away. It was like, all you've ever wanted. And I'm like, oh, will you please get out of my head? I want to go back to bed. I want to sleep. And in the end, it was getting so loud. I just got up and made a cup of tea. And, you know, I was like, okay, I'm up. All right, I'll give up. I'm up. Where does this want to lead? You know, I'm up. And I tried to write and I couldn't write. So I went on Clubhouse app. And I ended up speaking to a guy named Pete Cohen, and my weekend changed in a heartbeat. It got so much better. I got so much more information that I needed at that particular time. If I'd decided to procrastinate and stay in bed, my life wouldn't have got better this weekend. And that's the sort of procrastination I'm dealing with. It's that do or do not. And you know what? Every time I get the feeling, you know, hey, let's sit still for a moment, I'm switching that to, no, let's not switch still, sit still. Let's do something. Doesn't matter what it is, do something, because good things come when you start to do things.
You said it's Peter you spoke to.
Yeah, I spoke to Pete. I'd heard his stuff before. He's been on television for God knows how long. He's written 20 books. He's a big motivational speaker, a big goal setter for people. One of those guys who, like I said, why would they want to take interest in me? And I'm like, nervous about speaking. When I went onto Clubhouse to go in, I had no intention to speak to him. I just wanted to listen to what he had to say. And I'm there, and I don't know if your listeners know how Clubhouse works. It's basically like an open forum stage where people can get up and talk about whatever subject they want. There's so many different rooms on every different subject under the sun. I like to listen to the rooms on motivation and goal setting and finding the real you, the powerful you. And like I say, I had no intention of doing anything but other than listening to Pete. And the next thing you know, I've got a message on my screen, Pete's inviting you up on stage to speak. And I'm like, okay, now what do I do? Do I press accept or do I press decline? This is a big moment. So I accepted, not knowing where it would lead. And I had a good one-on-one chat with Pete. Now, if I hadn't done that, the following people who came on after me, people I've actually heard from, who gave me a live, genuine feedback about what I'm doing. And all of it was positive. Now that that boost for me was unbelievable. You know, it put me on an adrenaline high.
Yeah.
You know, and
were you levitating after that?
Pardon, what was that?
Were you levitating?
I was flying for 2 days. It's you know, it's when you get to speak to somebody who you respect and appreciate what they do, and you know they're kind of already in a place where you would like to be, you know, that is, and the best thing about Pete is he is so not judgmental, and quite frankly he doesn't care about your past. He cares about where you're going to be. And that is, you know, something where my mindset has, you know, been wavering. You know, I've required my past to get me where I am and teach me those life lessons. But that's not where I am anymore. It's the future that I'm focusing on. And, you know, I'm now focusing on getting other people to their future as well. You know, and having that rush and that high, it just, you know, that's the gasoline for my week. You know, my what will keep me going, what will, you know, I wrote so much yesterday because it was just flowing. It was like someone turned on the tap, you know, and we all need that gasoline putting into us sometimes. You know, we can't just rely on our own motivation to keep us going.
Was you writing before the depression, or
I've been writing nonsense. Sorry, no, that's not true. I've been writing since I was a young kid. Since I was very young, I used to write a lot of terrible fan fiction because I thought that's who I was. I thought that's why was going to write in the future was like comedy novels, or I was very much impressed when I was younger by comedians like Tony Hancock and Spike Milligan, and that's where I thought I was heading. But just like Tony Hancock and Spike Milligan, I went down the path of having depression instead, rather than focusing on the writing. And my writing got very, you know, it wasn't good. It wasn't until I beat the depression that I found my voice. I found what I was really good at writing, and what that was my story and how to take your everyday life and turn it into something amazing. And, you know, that's where I am now. I'm working on my first book. I'm daily writing on my Instagram page, you know, hints, tips, advice, basically other ways to think of your problems. Because, like I said earlier, when you change your thought process, things become a lot clearer. Most people are too set in their ways, and they think that, you know, the channel that they're in is the one that they've got for the rest of their lives. And the truth is that anybody, no matter who they are, no matter where they're from, they can change their life in an instant. And that choice is just one step away. All you have to do is change your direction. And that's, again, through my writing, that's what I'm helping people to do. And, the people who actually contact me, I'll mention one lady, I won't mention her name, but she's from South Africa. She was terrified of swimming, absolutely terrified of going in the water. But she wanted to be an instructor of some kind. And now the only way she could get through a course, she had to go swimming. And I managed to take her from somebody who doesn't go into the water to somebody who now is swimming every day, you know, doesn't need an instructor there to make sure she's not going to sink to the bottom. She loves to swim now. And that's, that gives me the gratitude. That gives me more to write about. And, you know, I'm so thankful for people like that who are turning their lives around just because I've managed to turn my life around, and now I'm passing that on. It's like the baton, you're passing it on to the next person, because I know that she will now go on and tell somebody else, you can do this, you can do this. You know, all you've got to do is take the step.
Isn't that what, before I ask you this other question, isn't that what life's about, isn't it? Well, I say that's one of the things that life's about, is about you having this knowledge or this thing or this acumen or whatever it may be, and you, rather than keeping it to yourself, which is what the world's kind of, well, a certain element of the world has become, me and you text back and forth, and, you know, I think you kind of hear some of the things that I say, some of the things come through quite strongly, because certain things I don't like in the world is injustices and stuff like that. And I think when I hear you speak that, and many others, when you know, because it's, you know, we've all got the story, we've all got the things, you know, my thing is helping, and same thing. And isn't that what it's about? Isn't that what life's about? Is about you having, you gaining some sort of knowledge and you passing it on, rather than you keeping it to yourself. Whether it be, I don't want to go down the roots of the monetary thing, but I'm just saying, you know, we collate things and we gain knowledge from zero growing up, and some of our knowledge, we kind of turn it to wonderful things. So that knowledge could be turned to, we've had, in the past how many years, things like technology, like 3D printing. Now, instead of someone keeping that technology of 3D printing to themselves, to be doing, whatever it may be, now they're looking at 3D printing for printing houses. Do you know what I mean? Making model houses and for homeless people and things like that. You think, you know, someone's going to intervene in that, and it's going to become a monetary thing, and then the house is going to end up costing, a homeless person's not going to be able to go in it because not going to be able to afford it. You know, things like that. So I just think what you're saying there is you had the knowledge and you've got the empathy, sympathy, empathy, and all those sort of things, to know that this person needs somebody to help them, guide them.
It's swimming. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I know exactly. Denzel Washington says it's be one, then lift one. You know, it's, you know, be a student, take what you've learned, pass it on to somebody else, and give them the lift that they need. You know, I was talking the other day about what I call the jigsaw of our lives. And our lives are put together by all these little bits of information that we get, and we slowly build up this picture which becomes us. And you can't get all your information from one place and live your life that way. And that's what so many people are doing. They're taking their views and this is why we get injustice and all this sort of thing, because people are very much focused on one thing. And you can't do that. You've got to take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and put it all together to make a big picture. And if everybody can do that and live their lives by taking, I would take a little piece of you and a little piece of somebody else, you know, and once we get to know everybody else and, you know, how they click and, you know, what they can give to us, you know, like you're giving the world this podcast, you know, I'm giving people my advice and tips from my knowledge, you know, and if everybody can give something to the greater pot of the, you know, of the world, rather than just taking one little bit, this planet is, you know, can be amazing, you know, if we're all pulling for each other rather than seeing each other's indifferences. You know, it's like, be yourself but do no harm.
I remembered something which I think I mentioned. I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but in the podcast. But I remember, because I've trained martial arts for 20 years, and I remember when I first started it, and you know, I wasn't interested in the belts and all that sort of stuff. And he said, "Oh, you gave me a, you know, I was a, at the time they put me on a green belt or whatever." But I wore that for years, even when I was so much advanced, I still wore it because I wanted my instructor to kind of advise me on how to get to the next stage. He wouldn't do it. And he was waiting for me to kind of ask him. Do you know what I mean? It was almost like the reverse. But anyway, I remember doing sparring with one of the guys who was a black belt. I mean, he's been there for years and stuff, and he's an expert. And I was at the time, one of the things that I picked up on with one of the guests was that it was the person was a perfectionist, and when the person was speaking, I was going, oh yeah, that was me. What happens? I used to beat myself up about things, and it used to lead into other things in my life. So if something broke, I'd blame it on myself. Or why did that happen to me? Why did that break? Why is it everything all happened to me? And what I was actually starting to voice is I'm being a perfectionist. Do you see what I mean? And I remember this guy doing this. Basically, he went to kick my leg, but he flicked his leg in one movement and kicked me. I did a roundhouse kick and kicked me in my face. And my face exploded. My lip was out here and all sorts. And I was angry with myself. I wasn't angry with the fact that him. I started literally going, God, what did you do that for? To myself. Why did you let that happen? What he said to me was, he taught me a lesson. He said to me, remember, you're not where I am.
Yep.
And he wasn't being nothing that big headed. He's basically saying to me, you're not where I am. You're at that level, and I've been doing this years. I've been doing that years. I've done that to many people, and I've been doing it years. And you're not gonna come in and see that straight away, or you're not gonna see that happening or whatever straight away. You know what I mean? Obviously, I was skillful enough to be able to spar him, because that's who they put me with. But he was at a different level, and he was able to do that. And then I'm there beating myself up about it instead of. And then if he hadn't spoke to me, I probably would have beat myself up for weeks and weeks about it, and be analysing it and thinking about it and going deep into it. Why did it happen? What angle did it come from? And this and, do you see what I mean? That was my thing.
Yeah.
Really beat myself up about it. And so when he spoke, it changed my perspective. And from then on, in a sense, that thing of being perfectionist left me. I started to realise that. And I watched documentaries on it and things like that, and there's no such thing as perfection. We're not perfect. None of us. There's no, even though there's this word called perfection and perfect, there's no such word, because it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist in the sense of someone could say that was a perfect kick, but there could have been another kick that was better than that. You see what I mean? And that person would probably say, oh no, it wasn't perfect. But someone else would be saying, so if everyone's saying different things, then there's no such thing as perfection.
Absolutely. You're totally making me smile with your story there, because when I trained in martial arts, I had those moments myself when I was sparring with the higher grades, and I still remember the pain. You know, because I this guy, he was hitting me in the same spot over and over, and I was blaming him for hitting me in that spot. It wasn't him, it was me letting him hit me in that spot. You know, and like you say, you go away, it's like, oh, why did he hit me in that same spot over and over again? Because he was teaching me a lesson. You know, move. And that was a trip down memory lane.
Was it a painful trip then?
It was. I used to do a pretty severe martial art. It was full contact with Bushido. In fact, I actually went up to Leicester quite a lot and trained up there. They had this thing. You knew when you'd been training. Basically, they called it the Kyokushinkai walk. Basically, you've been kicked in the leg so many times, you were walking with bowed legs. So yeah, you knew you'd been training, that's for sure. And I love those days. You know, I'm older now, and I don't think I could be as anywhere near as good as I was back then. But you know, happy days. I got taught a lot of lessons by a great instructor. You know, not just about martial arts, but about life, which unfortunately at the time I didn't understand, because I was young and foolish, you know. And now when I look back, it's just like such amazing lessons, just, you know, being taught to you through simple methods. You know, it's, you know, you may be getting hit, but you're not actually, that's not the lesson. The lesson is, you know, keep moving, block, move, you know, see where the attack is coming from, see where, you know, and you can relate that to absolutely anything in life.
I was about to say the same thing. You can relate that to life.
You know, and that's one of the things. I mean, everybody should try martial arts at some point, because it is a whole lesson. It isn't just, you know, the physical side of it. Is the whole shooting match. I always used to call it physical chess. You know, you've got to think a few moves ahead. You know, yeah, I love those days, and look back on them fondly.
Yeah, and it's I was gonna say a similar thing to you. Then is that, you know, when we look at life, and I mean, we could talk about this in another podcast as well, is about past. Even though we say we don't look back at the past, we do. There's parts of our life that we look back. We look back at the parts that make, because our past makes us. You know, they say it makes us and breaks us, but it makes us. It makes us who, even if we go through these things, whether it's depression, you know, whether we've been drinking, whether it's drugs or whatever it may be, whether it's even the other things, you know, whether it's going to the beach or whether it's, I don't know, you know, whatever it may be that you've gone through or has happened, it brings you to this point and makes you who you are. So we have facets of it, you know, we have facets of this, the good and the bad, or the middle ground, and people come into your life and people tempt you with things, and people, and then somehow you might lose your way. Like you say, you might go downhill and, you know, go into depression, or you might go into, you know, you might turn to crime or whatever. But it's about how we use those things to shape us now and be able to pass on that knowledge to others. Like I've been able to, I would say then that me speaking about that is passed on that knowledge. I didn't see that man as someone who beat me up, or he hit me there or whatever. All I saw was me. All I used to beat myself up was me. This is why did I get hit? Why did he kick me? Why didn't I see that coming? why, you know, what is it about me that thing? And you know, that kind of lends itself to other things in life. And I just thought, you know what, you know, that needs to change. And that part smoothed, you know, it kind of took me in a different path, took me away. And then I started to enjoy things in my life. I started to enjoy, you know, if I missed a goal in football or whatever, you know, I used to, oh my God, you don't know. Oh my gosh. Even if it was from a difficult angle, I could be on, I don't know, I could be from, you know, where the corner flag is, and I'll shoot, and surely I'm not going to score. Do you know what I mean? But yeah. If I'm attempting it, I'm thinking that I am. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that means I'm trying. Absolutely. But it's missed, and I'm beating myself. Oh, no. You know, and then that lesson there is, it's like you say, it's not to beat yourself up, and it's to learn from that. Like you said, you're learning from your past. And how, I always said this to children, and I take that into children's thing. When children miss a goal and I see them getting angry or miss something, I say to them, listen, you've missed. Yes, you've missed, and don't be angry with yourself, because what can happen if you're angry for the next 5 minutes and someone passes you the ball again in the next 2 minutes, and what can happen? They'll say things like, "Oh, I can end up not seeing the ball, or I can end up making a mistake on the ball because I go, why? Because I've been angry for the last 5 minutes, because my mind's diverted from." What my head should be on. My head should be on the game, and not thinking about my past. Because when it's gone, it's gone. It's happened.
Yeah. And in fact, I heard Dan Abrahams, the sports psychologist, the other day, and he was talking about that very thing that you're talking about, and it's actually got a name. The acronym is ANTS, and it's automatic negative thoughts. And basically, you miss the goal and you immediately start beating yourself up. Your mind takes over and just like pummels you, and then you're out of the game. You might as well not be there.
Yeah.
Because your mind isn't concentrating. You're not waiting for that next pass. You're not waiting for that next opportunity. You're still living 5 minutes ago, you know, and getting rid of the ants from your head is, you've got to stomp on them right away. As soon as it comes into your head, it's what you focus on, that's what you're going to become. So if you focus on the negative action all the time, that's where you're going to go. You're going to be focusing on the bad things that happen to you. You've got, when these things happen, you've got to stomp on them right away. It's like, boom, okay, that's done, that's over with, move on. You know, focus on the positives. You know,
definitely.
I had so many bad things happen in my life, but I choose not to focus on those. I focus on the good things. I was, thinking this morning that I remember all the Christmases when I was really young. They were great. You know, I had the picturesque family, and I just happened to, over the next, couple of decades, create this depression, and it was because I was focusing on the negative. And it works in, wherever you're on a sports field, or you're in the office at work, or no matter where you are, the moment those negative thoughts pop into your head, you've got the choice right there. You can either entertain it, let it in and keep it there, host a tea party for it, whatever. Or you can just shut it down immediately, and people will try and fill you full of negativity all day long in some offices. It's like they're like a negativity machine. If you actually sit back and listen to what people are talking about, 90% of it is negative, and that's bombarding you all day long. And it's up to you whether you join in on that stuff, or you sit back and just keep your own counsel, turn your mind to something else, something more positive. And that makes all the difference. It really, really does.
I was going to say that as well, because before we kind of, because I want to talk about some of the things that you, where you want to go and where you want to, what you want to do. I just thought about it when you were speaking then again, is, you know, we often see this in something like snooker, where, and I bet you if you ask the person, is that what they focused on, you know, long afterwards, because that's probably one of the games where there's an element of the shot, when we say the most the perfect storm shot, that storm that everything comes together at the right time, that shot, and quite often if that shot doesn't come off, because it's all about angles, isn't it? We look at snooker, it's not like football and things like that and all the other sports. Snooker is one of those games where it's there's two people pitted against each other, and that shot has to be accurate to get into for a cut or whatever it may be. Now, for those snooker players, you can probably bet your bottom dollar that I don't know if you've probably come across this before, where a snooker player has been, I don't know, 16-12 up or whatever it may be, or you know, and on the, you know, maybe one frame away from winning the world championship or whatever it may be, and then they've missed the shot, and all of a sudden from then on, because what happens is if you take on that negativity or take on that thing of the missed shot, or they take on that miss, you know, the missed opportunity or miss whatever it is, and you take that on board on your shoulders, someone else slips in. Someone else comes in while you're sitting still, analysing why you did this and why you did that, and you're beating yourself up, and someone else will come along, either do the same thing to you again, or, you know, slip in and make their way to wherever they're going, which is kind of, you probably ask a snooker player, they probably go, oh, it was that one shot that, out of all the good they did leading up to it, it was that one shot, that kind of thing, and then what that does, it gives the other player a lift. So that's the only thing I was thinking about, that is, that's one of the main sports where you would have that thing of, this thing has to go in at the right angle, and if I miss this, it lets the other person in.
Snooker is definitely one of those games where you have to be on your A game, especially, I mean, all the respect for those guys who are playing at the highest level there. I mean, I've only ever played in the snooker halls, but, you know, for those guys with the pressure, and all it takes is for that one shot to be slightly off, and it's a matter of centimetres, you know, and that's the difference between winning the grand prize and, you know, getting your bus fare home. You know, these people have so much pressure on their shoulders, and yet must really haunt them, that one mistake. I mean, a bit like poker players. No poker player ever remembers winning a big hand, but they can tell you with incredible accuracy every bad beat that they've ever had. You know, and I'm sure it must be the same way for snooker players. You know, they probably replay that shot time and time again in their heads. And moving on from that must be incredibly difficult for them. But, you know, that's what we're trying to do in life, is move on from those moments as quickly as we possibly can.
Yeah, that's right, moving on. And like you say, moving on, you know, moving on from the shot, from that happening to you, this happening to you, how do we move on? Do we get people around us to talk to us? Do we go into our shell? You know, for you, what do you see as your purpose now? I kind of guess what your purpose is, but how do you see your purpose in life? What do you do at this moment in time, and what do you think your purpose is moving forward?
My purpose I know in my heart of hearts that I am here to help people who've been through or are going through what I went through. And it's, I see myself kind of like a bit like a lighthouse, trying to get people out of their fog, because that's what I call my depression. It was my fog. You know, I never had the light being, you know, shining at me. So hopefully I can help people, you know, find their own way to help themselves out of their own depression. You know, because it's no good somebody telling you how to do something, because, you know, it's like when your mum tells you to go clean your room, you don't want to do it. You know, you have to find that bit of information that goes, hey, okay, that makes sense. And then you add that to another bit of information that makes sense, and then another, and another, and another. And as soon as you like get these things going together, suddenly the door opens, the light comes on, boom, you're free and having a great life. That's what I intend to do, whether it be with online coaching, running courses on you know, positivity, and, you know, finding your simplicity in life, finding your goal, finding your path. You know, that's what I intend to do with my coming years, is focusing on others and getting them to where they want to be, because I've got a great life. You know, I feel amazingly abundant. You know, I don't think money is an issue. Would I love £1 million in the bank? Who wouldn't? But it's not about money. It's about having this passion, you know, an inbuilt, like an energized bunny inside me. Just, you know, boom, 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 boom. This is what you want to do. It's like, come on, you know, every day I feel like a superhero. You know, I've found that, you know, my superpower, and I want to, you know, give that to everybody else. You know, so whether it be with the book, you know, giving out advice, you know, helping with charities, giving talks, you know, and I'm looking for the excitement that comes with that, you know, because I know, you know, especially like after talking to you, I can feel the energy welling inside me, because I love this so much, and I love the talking to people and sharing my message. You know, and I just wish everybody could have that. And if I can give it to, you know, just one person, then I'm happy. I've done my job. And yeah, that's where I'm heading, you know.
I knew you were going to say helping, and what came to my mind then is, and it sounds, I don't know if it sounds cliche, but it probably is. And and when we say cliche, it doesn't mean it's a negative thing, but the Aunt May in the was it the first Spider-Man? And she's,
yes.
And she says, oh, there's a hero in all of us, you know. And there is. Mm-hmm. What that part in the film is actually saying to us is, it's not just telling Peter that, it's telling all humans.
Yeah.
You know, might be a superhero and all that sort of stuff, but she's letting, by being this image on the big screen of this lady, this older lady, wiser lady, she's letting us know as humans that there's a hero in all of us, whether we choose it or not.
Yeah. Our story is the hero's story. And if you, I'm getting into Joseph Campbell territory here. He wrote about the hero's journey. You know, there is a hero in all of us, and it's, you know, the hero is always reluctant to take on the story. Like any movie you ever watch, like Star Wars, that was heavily based on Joseph Campbell's look at mythology. You know, Luke Skywalker, you know, the guy who blows up the Death Star, he didn't want to go. He wanted to stay on the farm. You know, he was a dreamer, and he needed Ben Kenobi to get him out of his rut and help him fulfill his destiny. And that's what we all need. We all need, I heard it described the other day by, it was actually Pete Cohen. He said, we all need our own personal Gandalf. We all need that person to give us our push into our hero mode. You know, and I've had several Gandalfs through the years. You know, it just happens that Pete is my current new Gandalf. you know, and I guess that, you know, I'm somebody else's teacher, somebody else's person to get them on their hero quest. You know, and that comes, you know, goes for anybody, you know, with what you're doing here. You know, people who are listening, hopefully it'll trigger them to get onto their quest, and whatever it may be. You know, we've all got that one desire, that itch in our life, that thing that makes us dream of where we want to go, where our goals. Sometimes we just need that little help along the way. And yeah, that's where I want to be. I want to be the one to help people live their lives to the fullest.
Yeah. And where can, you know, before we, you know, wrap this up, where can you be found? What, you know, can people come and talk to you? What, you know, whether, you know, saying where can you be found? I know it's Bury St Emma's, but I don't want people banging on your door when you're drinking a cup of tea. What, where can you be found on social media?
I'm mainly on Instagram. You can find me there at depression_beaten, and I'm on there every day. And anybody can message me at any time. I am quite happy to talk to absolutely anybody and give advice, help, and you know, never be afraid to, if you've got a problem, to reach out. And I am there. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but I've found this, the app Clubhouse, which I shared with you the other day, Andy. And Clubhouse is absolutely amazing, and I'm planning on starting rooms in there for depression, beating your own depression and finding your way out of the fog and living your perfect life. And you can find me, if you've got Clubhouse, you can find me there, David V. Baker. You'll find me there. I've also got a WordPress, which is at Depression Beaten, and I'm just going back into Twitter again. But that's mainly all my Instagram stuff, so just stick to Instagram.
Yeah, definitely. And as I say to you, it's been good talking to you. I mean, it's good. I mean, I'm going to say thank you as well for getting me onto to Clubhouse, and, you know, meeting, you know, listening to, I've been listening to him twice now, Peter.
Yeah.
I didn't know of him before, you know, never heard of him before. So, you know, it's nice of you to put me onto him, and kind of, I've just been listening to him, and I get, what I get from him is that he's very, he seems genuine, and he wants people to connect. And also there's a thing to do with the world, there's an energy. You know, some people can speak and do all these things and make out that this, this and this, and quite often they're not who they are. We call them charlatans. And Peter's coming across as a genuine person who gives people an opportunity to speak about themselves and where they're going. And I like the part where he puts music on and things like that. So it's been, you know, it's been, just thank you for that. You know, obviously there's connections in there, people that I'd like to have on. And, you know, again, you know, just you take inspiration from different people. You know what I used to say? I said this to somebody. I said this to my wife, actually, my ex-wife. And I said to her, you know, it got to a point, I sat there then. I said to her, what is it that, I always used to question, why is it that I'm always there to help others and no one helps me? And why is it I'm someone, everyone else's angel? I used to look at it like that, and she turned around to me and she says, maybe that's your calling. Maybe that's the way it is. Maybe someone sees that you can help yourself. And yes, there's other people that can, you can get help from others, but maybe that's your calling. Your calling is to help others. And maybe people don't even see that you need help when you need it, because you're probably too busy dealing with their things, or you can probably cope with it in a way, in a certain way. And I thought, I turned it on. She turned it on its head, completely turned inside its head. And I thought, look at that. Look at that, you know. Because here's me questioning me being this guardian angel for helping others, and no one's helping me, and no one's kind of got me. But when I look back and think, switch it around and think, oh, maybe that's the way it's meant to be. And that's my calling. That's the reason why I asked you about your calling. What is your calling? So, yeah. So I'd like to say, the force is strong with this one.
It is. It, you know, when you've got that goal, when you actually find out what your purpose is in life, it is intoxicating. You know, that's what Mark Twain said. You know, there's 2 days in everybody's life: the day you're born and the day you find out why. And you know, I found my why, and I love it. And you know, was it tough getting here? Oh, it was extremely tough. Did I nearly not make it? Yes, I nearly didn't make it. But I had to go through all of those things to get to where I am. So I would not change a thing. You know, I'm 51. You know, my life is fantastic. I'm getting married later on in the year. You know, it's, you know, I couldn't ask for anything else in this life. What the gift I've been given is, you know, is priceless. And yeah, wouldn't change a thing. And you know, that's why I'm so happy.
Fantastic. And fantastic. It's been great talking to you, and kind of you know, we've been talking and kind of giving out your wisdom in the world, and by giving this wisdom, we're actually, what we said earlier is having that knowledge of what we've been through, and now it's back. You're giving back by you speaking and speaking out. And you know, quite often, if you're not here to tell the tale, there's no one to tell it for you.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no one to tell your story for you, even if you relate for them. You know, you could have a ghostwriter writing your book, but that's not their perspective of what you've. This is what I mean. That's your story comes from you, and like you say, we're doing our best to kind of get the message out there, because words are very powerful, and once we put that positivity, that positive energy into the world, we're going to get it back, and we should pass it on to others.
Absolutely, Andy. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's been a pleasure talking to you again. We talk a lot of, you know, online on Instagram and that sort of thing. And I love talking to you. You're a great soul, and you're doing great things. And long may it continue.
Thank you, David. And that
you're welcome.
Was Men Are Nuts. Speak to you soon.